we're going to turn now to an important new effort that was just announced last week, an important milestone in another labor campaign here in New York City. On Friday, some 200 Columbia graduate workers delivered a letter to the Office of University President Lee Bollinger, asking that he agree to a fair and efficient process to recognize a graduate student union. Like other workers, we deserve living wages, adequate benefits, clear workload expectations, and consistent and transparent employment policies, write the graduate students who signed that letter. If the students' unionization bid is successful, Columbia will, of course, become one of just two private U.S. universities to bargain with a graduate student union. The other would be Columbia's downtown neighbor, NYU, which a year ago granted union recognition to its student workers, of which your host this morning is one, of course. As we've covered here on the morning show, at NYU, we're currently in contract negotiations with the university administration, and Columbia now hopes to make this a trend at private universities here in New York and around the country. Joining us now to discuss this unionization effort are Paul Katz, a second-year PhD student in the History Department, and Olga Brudostova, who's in her first year of the PhD program in the Department of Civil Engineering and Engineering Mechanics. Paul and Olga, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having us.
So first, Olga, why don't you tell us, why do Columbia graduate workers want to unionize? What kinds of issues are you facing as workers that you hope the union will help you with?
There are many different issues, and they very often depend from department to department. But I think the main issue is not having a say in decision-making and administrative processes, which further results in lack of transparency and clarity in these processes, like the distribution of workload, health insurance that we're assigned, housing that we're assigned, and little things like not being paid on time, not being clear where to complain, who to complain to in cases of issues arising.
Got it. So you all have petitioned to be affiliated with the UAW Local 2110, which is the amalgamated local that also includes NYU's graduate union, GSOC. As our listeners are probably aware, NYU agreed to voluntary recognition of the union at that university after more than 8 years of organizing in an unprecedented move. What was the reaction at Columbia to the recognition at NYU, and how did it change the organizing that you all were doing there, Paul?
Well, I think a lot of us just felt really inspired by NYU's voluntary recognition, but much more than that, by the hard work on the part of NYU's graduate workers to earn that recognition. Certainly, I think that the mood changed last fall here at Columbia, and we were really heartened to find that in departments across campus, graduate workers were talking about how we could achieve something similar here at Columbia.
Right. And so what kinds of work are people doing there, Paul, at Columbia? What are the categories of work? Obviously, people are teachers, right, at the university, but what sort of other kinds of work are people doing?
Well, I think that graduate workers at Columbia really are responsible for a lot of the labor that makes this world-class university run. Certainly, the two major categories are teaching and research. So, you know, in addition to providing the teaching, the services to students, like running office hours, grading papers, things that really make lecture classes run, we also are responsible for helping to make the labs that generate, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars in grants for this world-class university work effectively.
Right. And so, Olga, maybe you can tell us a little bit about some of the stories that you all have heard and collected there at Columbia about the working conditions and some of the problems that the workers have faced that you're hoping to organize against.
Oh, well, it is hard to come up with the most horrifying story, but assume we don't have a goal of making it. So, I don't know. My experience was not being paid on time, and by not being paid on time, I mean delay in 2 to 3 months. So I think this is, and when I was getting checks by semester, so it was like 3 semesters with no money on hand. And I know it's not the worst case even. Other stories, I've heard a lot of horror stories about people with dependents, like kids and spouses, and they're not being able to include them on the health insurance plans. And actually, health insurance is not that great even for people who want to provide it for themselves, mm-hmm. because we have copays that increased this year, and we were notified post-factum. And I know that if people turn out in the hospital, they have to pay thousands or more than hundreds of dollars for for staying there for 1 or 2 days. So things like that, not having dental and vision. There are issues with housing, like rent increasing annually, our stipend, not so much. What other issues can I come up with? Maybe Paul has something to add, I don't know.
but before we go to you, Paul, Olga, you mentioned not being paid as not being... one of the more egregious things that are done, but it's maybe not that bad, but I think it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad not being paid and having to exist all that time without money. But you talked about the distribution of workload. Could you just highlight a little bit more? What workload are you talking about?
Sure. Well, luckily, I don't have to TA, but people who have to TA, I know, they don't know for sure what classes they're going to TA next semester. They don't have a say in most cases what classes they'd rather TA. And also the classes are not even in the workload, in the number of students, in the number of homeworks, and sessions to teach. So this is, I think, an unevenness of distribution of the workload that I've mentioned. And people are paid equally for all the TA that they're doing in the department, no matter how hard the work was.
Right. So, I mean, clearly you're describing a situation that I'm very familiar with in a similar situation at NYU where, you know, graduate students come, they live in New York City for, you know, 5, 7, 8 years, and they're expected to live on, you know, $25,000 a year, situation where in no other industry would the level of wages be acceptable. And, you know, people are just really treated so precariously, as though things like late payment and incredibly expensive health coverage won't completely derail not only their own personal lives, but the work that they're actually doing for the university. So, Paul, can you tell us a little bit about what happened when you delivered this letter and sort of what the next steps are for the union?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'll just say very quickly, by the way, that I think you completely hit on what unites a lot of us, the sense of precarity and a real feeling that being able to collectively bargain a contract is our response to it. When we delivered our letter requesting that President Bollinger and the administration grant us a fair and expedient process to certify our majority, unfortunately, we weren't able to receive an immediate response because he wasn't in his office. but we did read the letter to his assistants, and we also read the letter simultaneously to the 200 graduate students who were gathered on the steps of Low Library, Columbia's administrative building, to demand swift recognition. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a very energizing moment for our movement, despite the fact that we weren't able to get an immediate response. And as far as we know, there has been no formal response from the administration yet.
And so what do you anticipate your next steps being organizing-wise? I mean, there's actually been a tremendous amount of press coverage of your campaign. It's been covered in Al Jazeera, and The New Yorker, and various other places. And so, you know, it seems as though there is a great deal of public pressure. What do you anticipate your next steps being in the organizing effort? And do you anticipate that you'll be taking this to the National Labor Relations Board?
Well, I think our top priority at this point is definitely to find an expedient way to certify our majority. Mm. And what we're hoping is that Columbia will grant us a process like that and will also assume a position of neutrality so that this can be a decision among graduate workers, which is really the sort of decision we believe it is. Of course, if they're not willing to do so, then we are going to pursue whatever routes are available to certify our majority, and certainly a suit at the National Labor Relations Board is probably the most likely next step. In terms of our organizing, though, I think, of course, it's in a sense, it's tempting after A year of continual organizing and, the last 3 months being sort of a sprint from start to finish to rest on our laurels, to say, oh, this is a great moment for us and we're just going to bask for a week or two. but of course, we recognize that we can't do that at all. In fact, now it's probably more critical than ever before that we keep in touch with all of the student contacts that we've made, that we continue to expand our base of support and our base of active organizers, and that we be in the position of greatest strength for what will likely be a number of very intense and exciting months ahead.
That's great. And I think one thing people maybe don't realize about Columbia, Columbia is definitely regarded, the sort of uptown ivy. There is some of this kind of ivory tower ideas about what goes on there, and people don't have a real sense of the working conditions. And one thing that maybe people don't realize is that you also have workers involved at the Columbia University Medical Center. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. We've organized across campus.
And so what are the people who work up at the medical center? Who are those graduate workers?
Olga, would you like to speak to this?
From the people that we've talked to, they are also teaching assistants and research assistants. And I think the most number of these workers are researchers in different positions, but still. And I think their teaching assistantship might differ slightly from ours and the system in general. And I might not be the best person to talk about the system, but still, I think the work is general and it's crucial to the existence of the whole campus uptown, the medical campus. So whichever work they do, it is the core of the university.
Right. And obviously 2110 is an amalgamated local, and there are workers there at Barnard and Columbia that are already represented by that union local. What sort of response have you gotten from other local unions and other kind of supportive groups?
Well, the response so far has been overwhelmingly positive, certainly from the other affiliated workers here at Columbia. We've just felt incredible solidarity. I think all of us are proud to be joining this community. And from the broader bulk of union organizers in the New York City area and beyond, the response has just been so heartening, very energizing for all of us.
That's really great to hear. We have been speaking to members of the new Columbia Graduate Workers Union, Paul Katz and Olga Brudostova from Columbia University. Just as we wrap up here, Paul, I wonder if you can speak to what is becoming this kind of, what we hope will become this movement of workers at private universities. As many of our listeners will know already, it is fairly typical for graduate workers at public universities to be organized, but NYU was actually the first union to organize the graduate workers at private universities. So, and we know that there are ongoing campaigns at places like Yale. Can you speak to if you think this is an emerging trend and what the Columbia workers are trying to do to sort of reach out to people at other campuses as well?
Well, I mean, we certainly hope it's an emerging trend, and we're very excited to be part of it. There's no doubt that we were inspired by the efforts of others at NYU, at Yale, and certainly at public universities across the country. And we certainly hope if this can help to build momentum, that would be amazing, whether it be by building pressure for voluntary recognition on the part of private university administrators, or by pursuing a suit at the NLRB that ultimately overturns the very partisan 2004 decision that stripped graduate workers of their collective bargaining rights.
Right.
Either way, we'd love to contribute to this trend.
That's great. As I said, we have been speaking to Paul Katz and Olga Brudostova, graduate workers at Columbia University, about this week's announced unionization effort there. Paul and Olga, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And you are listening to WBAI.